And in our so-called grown-up, so-called evolved state, how do we treat our single mums? How do we treat our mums? How do we treat our women, our sisters, our mothers, our daughters? And so part of my evolution, I feel, for this year, to answer your question, has been the remembering of the fertile soil in which I emerged.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis, and welcome to In Search of the New Compassionate Male. I'm the producer of this podcast, and I'm here with the founder, Clay Boykin. Hello, Clay. Would you please lead us to our wonderful guest today?
I will. Hi, Dennis. Gee, we have Simon Cohen with us. And Simon, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. You know, I'm going to just hit a couple of things high level, just kind of frame this. As I understand it, Simon, you started a communications company called Global Tolerance. You've spent several years working with the Dalai Lama, with the Prince of Wales, Desmond Tutu, Gandhi's grandson, and God knows who else. I want to hear about it all, and we've only got 50 minutes to do it in, so let's get started. Dennis?
Yes, Simon. I'm very interested in 2020. Here we are in October, at the end of October of 2020, and there appears to be something going on in the globe. Something going on, and what Clay and I have been finding or seeing is that there is something, an elevation of the human consciousness in many ways. And with you, with your deep media background, your connection to people around the world, can you talk about it from your perspective? Are you seeing something also? Are you hearing it from the people that you're connecting with? Because in every piece of media that I see of you, I hear something exciting.
Bless you. Thank you. Do I feel there's an evolution or an elevation in human consciousness? Well, the one consciousness I can speak to is my own,
Yes.
and I also feel at the same time that the microcosm of my own experience in this life has got a symbiotic relationship with the macrocosm of the world. So I guess perhaps by going through some of my own reflections on my own consciousness and its evolution or devolution, then we can extrapolate from there. I have been feeling since, well, I should say that my journey started just over 41 years ago with an incredible act of courage and compassion when my mum carried me around in her womb for 9 months and then labored me. And having witnessed the birth of our three children, I have just an inkling and insight in terms of the amount of courage and strength and effort that breathed me into being. And I want to start there because I think as human beings, we have a tendency to overcomplicate things. And one of the beauties of the great masters, be they child masters or elders that I've come into contact with over the years is simplicity. Their words resonate with a childlike innocence and simplicity. It's the words, the actions, the choices touch something us that help us to remember ourselves. And in that vein, the single and act of compassion of a mother going through that courage and compassion of giving birth to a child, and then not only that, then embarking on a lifelong, you know, all of us, the rest of the stuff from changing diapers to heart pounding, heart wrenching experiences from there. And in our so-called grown up, so-called evolved state, how do we treat our single mums? How do we treat our mums? How do we treat our women, our sisters, our mothers, our daughters? And so part of my evolution, I feel, for this year, to answer your question, has been the remembering of the fertile soil in which I emerged, and the appreciation and gratitude for my mother and her mother and all of our ancestors, all of our mothers. And that simplicity is a hard place to get to, because just as we have been discovering, many of us who have been in privileged positions and haven't been hand to mouth during lockdown have been discovering that the stuff that we thought that we needed, we don't need. They're just wants, they're desires. And that actually we're okay where we are, and our neighbors are all right as well. And we're able to discover our neighborhoods and eat together, and these other seemingly obsolete or arcane ways of living and being that are hearts from the past. And we're seeing, remembering again, the beautiful simplicity in what someone once said, that happiness lies in not having what you want, but wanting what you have. Right. And suddenly we're remembering that we want what we have. And actually what we have, if we have good health and we have each other,
yes,
then what else could we possibly want? And I think that's part of the evolution, but the grief within that evolution is that which we might need to let go of. Mm-hmm. It's the you know, I've had 41 years plus of being a material man in a material world, and you know, I'm speaking to you on a shiny computer. I've got my phone, I've got my material stuff. I am part of that whole rhythm and dance, and I like it. And at the same time, I know that if I am truly to step into my power, if I am truly to be the elder or the evolved being that I know lies latent within me, then that means giving up some of those old ways of being that did not serve me, that do not serve my connection to life. Being apart from my parents and my ancestry, or the stories of my land, or the stories of my neighbors, or the stories of my children, does not serve my connection to life. And so I think that with this evolution that I am seeing, which is a remembering, a reconnecting with that which we once knew, which children already know already, which is that there's magic in the mundane, that there is no such thing as an ordinary person or an ordinary thing. There is extraordinary everywhere. And part of the consequence of that is not just knowing it, not just rationalizing it, but experiencing it and then making courageous choices to honor that which we've learned. And some of those choices for me have been around, who are the people that I let into my life? Do they serve me? Do they connect into my life? How can I have an evolved consciousness if I surround myself with people that subtract my energy and take energy from me in order to add to their own?
Yes.
How can I sustain myself and those around me, my community, my world, if I don't do that? So there are some very practical, courageous choices that I feel need to be made in order for this glimpse, this inkling that I have felt that you have shared as well, that there is something going on. But are we going to be making those choices? And of course, an election which is coming up in just over a week's time, is one such choice, because yes. we can get very comfortable very quickly with our norms. We're creatures of habit, of routine. And to make any change, takes courage. And to make any change takes a sense of that I have agency, and that I am worthy of love, and I matter, and that my choices matter as well. And that is a big thing for us to go through as part of our evolution of consciousness as a species. Do we matter? Are we worthy of love? And yes. If we are, what choices are we going to make to honor that realization?
Yeah.
I want to ask something of both of you here, because my intuition is that the three of us are going through this at the same time. Mm-hmm. The first thing is that the people who look on the podcast, listen to the podcast, are going to know things, because they're going to listen to it after November 3rd, that we do not know now. So it will be interesting to see how that is. The second thing is that how is it that when those of us who have chosen to live life in the limelight, to go out there on the stage, Simon, you have chosen to go out and to make movies and to make the 3-minute films that you're doing are stunning. They're stunning pieces of art that say that open ourselves. So you've chosen to be in the limelight. Clay, you have chosen to be at the forefront of In Search of the New Compassionate Male. I am choosing to go on the Grandma Moses path, which is to take my speech and my and to do my elderhood to go on and to get into the limelight. How do you still stay boundaries, still have your vulnerabilities and maintain boundaries while you are on this path and having everyone wanting to pull at your coat and your raiments?
I'll take a quick stab. I'm not doing so hot at it. I feel like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. I keep making this shape, and I'm keep drawn back to it, and that shape for me is the new compassionate male, and it's in, and I'm not pushing towards it. It's pulling me, and I'm all in, and Dennis is all in. Yeah. And it is a challenge, because I mean, I'm new at this part of it, you know, taking this out into the world. Yeah. And, I'm living it 24/7, and it comes with a price.
And you've done this longer than we have, Simon, and you have achieved a great deal more global presence than we have. So how are you dealing with it? How are you keeping your center, keeping your boundaries, and still staying so vulnerable that you do, that you are? That's one of the things that so touches me about you, is that you give the appearance of working that path.
Thank you. Well, I'm in quite a vulnerable space right now. I just recently returned from a 5-day immersive nature-based retreat where I confronted and befriended a great deal of childhood trauma and more recent trauma as well, and being in relationship to that. I feel the at the core of being in the limelight is around motivation. And I think the younger me, when I say younger, I mean before the retreat a week ago.
Exactly. That was so long ago. Oh, my goodness. I mean, eons.
Yeah. As a child, I still have that habit energy, what Thich Nhat Hanh calls habit energy. I still have it from my younger years, and probably from past lifetimes as well. This looking out for external validation, always trying to be the nice guy and you know, to be liked, to be, you know, like me, I'll do anything for you. And And I think that my motivation in my younger days was, of course, this was never explicit or expressed. Hindsight's a beautiful thing. Was around getting external validation, whether or not it's the number of likes or the number of viewers, or, you know, being on national radio or speaking on big global platforms. And yeah, oh, that feels really good. I therefore must matter. That's how it works, isn't it?
You're well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was draining, and it turned out that my body was immune to my mind's charm. And after quite a number of years of putting myself out there and putting some of these world figures out there through representing them and being a spokesperson or a communicator for them, I burned out.
Yeah.
I burned out. My inner child, little Simon, was yearning for loving kindness, tenderness, attention, for me to listen in to his needs. And it's only been in the last week, so this has come at a really ripe moment for me, that I've not only known rationally or logically in my mind that I am worthy of love, of life, and feeling all that there is to feel, but I've experienced it with my whole body. I've experienced what it means to be an essential part of nature, what Matty J.T. Stepanek, the late great poet and 13-year-old peacemaker, called, we are all essential pieces in the mosaic of life. You know, I really felt that essential part of life. And so whenever I put myself out there in the public domain, and I guess this is one manifestation of that, I'm very clear about my motivation for that. And the motivation is what sustains. Because my motivation is unburdened by a baggage of external validation. It's unburdened by the need. Yeah, sure, there's the wish, but by the need for you or your listeners or viewers to like me in order for me to like myself. And I think, you know, in this, there's so much talk about sustainability out there, as though it's something that is out there. And we talk about climate change as though it's out there. But what about our inner climate? How can we sustain the world if we cannot sustain ourselves? How can I speak to you authentically about sustainability if I've got bags under my eyes and I've got heart palpitations because I've got so much anxiety? And so I feel that inner sustainability strategy, rooted through mindfulness and mindful practice, rooted through nature connection, rooted through being with children, and we've produced many. So I've got a head start in that regard for those without children. Being around those wisdom keepers, these wisdom keepers and the wisdom of nature and the wisdom of the conscience, these are the things that when I read the one nasty comment out of 100 and am tempted to fixate on them and just ban them from my page to keep the projection of perfection, you know, the thing that stops me from waking up in cold sweats about that is re-remembering again that beautiful simplicity of the child's smile, of my motivation, that I am worthy of love, I am a good person, and I am trying my best in my own imperfect way.
Mm.
I love hearing your story. I love hearing Clay's story come out of your mouth in his voice, because you had that experience in the Caribbean.
Oh, Clay. Lord, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I had totally burned out, and I was just a little bit older than you at the time. I was 53. And I had burned my candle at both ends. I had traveled the world. I was, you know, officed on Park Avenue, had everything going. And I sat in the woods for 3 days, realizing I was on the verge of a heart attack. I was exactly what you were talking about, bags under my eyes. I had pre-heart attack symptoms. But for me, it was that point where I found the most incredible peace. I never went into fear. This peace that, okay, this is it. And at the time I was, you know, doing crafts with my little pocket knife, you know, and you know, left most of that there. But when I got on the other side of it, and yeah, I ended up when I got home in the hospital and surgery and I lived, you know, but on the other side of it, I said, you know, who's to say this isn't the last day of my life? And when I was there and I was doing what was in my heart to do, exercising the creative side of myself on my last day, because I was sure it was, who's to say this isn't my last day? And am I on purpose? Am I doing what's in my heart to do? Mm-hmm. And that was a huge moment of truth for me. And that comes to mind every day. In a beautiful way. That was a sacred experience I'll never forget. Yeah.
And how to Dennis's point or question, and how to sustain the revelation in the woods in that moment, in the face of a culture, society that mm-hmm. wants to keep us consuming, keep us fighting each other, keep us polarized rather than united. How do we keep that sense of unity, that sense of peace?
Exactly. And how do we do that when we are on the front lines, when we are putting ourselves out there? We're not just sitting back in our houses and yelling at the television set and going, oh my, isn't that, or you know, we are actually out there in front of people. We're actually taking our vulnerabilities, our openness, and going and saying, we're going to present ourselves with everything and who we are, as real and as authentic as we possibly can be, in front of people, instead of having, when I was growing up in the 50s, Simon and Clay, we've talked about this before, is that everything was facade. Whatever happened behind that door, good God, who knows? And there was a lot of stuff, even in the privileged circumstances what I was growing up. But as long as the facade was okay, that we would do, and that's a deep ingrained piece of what we are. And now what we are doing, what I see the three of us doing, is stepping out from behind this facade and saying, this is who I really am, 360, where I am, and working to keep that way, even though we are stepping into the center stage to do this.
Well, yes, I think it would be lovely to tease out what we mean by vulnerabilities, though, because when I hear the word vulnerability, I think about a presumption of an environment where you can see my weaknesses and therefore you can hurt me. I show you that I have a heartfelt fear, and therefore that's a vulnerability. And a vulnerability is something for someone to take advantage of for their own gain. I don't believe in that world. I believe in the innate kindness of all human beings, all of
built
them.
In. It's yeah. in yeah. our DNA. It's there. It's not something that it's not an add-on, like you go to a dealership and say, oh, by God, by the way, I'd like to have a little of that vulnerability put in. It's there.
A quarter of that. Yeah.
It's there. But what I think that we're talking about when we say vulnerabilities, and correct me if I'm wrong, is being honest about who we are and what's going on, and liberating ourselves from a cultural projection of perfection that necessarily leads to unhappiness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to add to that.
Beautifully said.
Well, and to add to that, you know, what Brene Brown says, you know, about standing in my truth with an open heart. And that is to me, the perfect place of vulnerability. And yes, there's another side of it where I call it being having a broken heart, where I've in fear and doubt. And that's a spectrum, and we always live along that, somewhere along there. But the thing for me is to recognize that I have choice, that I may be like this and hiding behind it, realizing that I can really show up like this and really bring my true self, my full self into whatever situation or the environment. And that's more powerful.
Yes. And it's not only more powerful, it's more effective, you know, for those of us who would like to see sustained social change happen. How do we get there? And for me, having conversations that matter, starting with what is moving my heart right now, start telling you that last week I did not feel that I was worthy of love, and going through these trauma, that brings us closer together. And if I am in a conversation with you, whether it's a professional conversation or personal conversation or something else, it's a catalytic converter for change. So it is something that is strategically, socially smart to be open and fully human. Wholeheartedness is the thing that we need most.
Thank you. And I want to ask you, Simon, I mean, imagine, because what Clay and I grew up with, we grew up with examples. One of the things that we had the challenges with is that the examples of men that we saw as the icons, as the people that were respected as men, and we looked inside ourselves and said, wait a minute, or at least I certainly did. I certainly don't. That's not who I am. So therefore, there must be something wrong with me. So I do that. So then I go to your children and I'm imagining they get a chance to see someone, to see their father, to go on a retreat and to come back. And they get to watch from their perspective, they get to watch a human being consciously working to evolve, consciously working to do. My goodness, what a blessing that they get to experience watching you go through that.
Mm. Well, these last 2 years have been the hardest and best years of my life. Mm. Last year with the birth of our third child, which was a traumatic birth. I thought that we lost her when she was delivered. Mm. She was completely non-responsive. Kate, my wife, couldn't see what was going on, and there was a big scramble, and it was awful. Thankfully, she was and is fine, and is at least 98% angel. That's the latest stat to come out. Like that brought up a lot of other trauma and stuff that I had been. I'd been carrying, and I also had some stomach cramps at the time, which I went into the doctor, and the Western medical name for suppressed grief is irritable bowel syndrome.
Well said.
But you know what? I realized through not only Zena, the birth of Zena, our third child, but other things that happened last year as well. But I didn't really cry. I couldn't remember the last time that I cried. I always used to come out with an awkward laugh. And apparently, because I investigated this, in our household, crying wasn't really allowed or done. It wasn't just, heaven forbid, the facade should crack. And I couldn't cry. So I did some work, some acupuncture, with lots of meditation, lots of talking, and lots of tears came.
Mm.
And when they flowed, my goodness, they really flowed. And I was very deliberate about crying in front of my children. And letting those tears flow. I've also got a we live on the coastal path in Cornwall in southwest of the UK, and I've got myself a little sob spot on the coastal path. It's actually in our neighbour's garden, but you know, it's a big garden, so what they don't know won't hurt them. And so that's, so I've got my I do cry in front of the children. Then for the wailing, for the real wailing,
yeah.
I will go to my sob spot occasionally and become all disheveled and hair all over the place as well, and cry. Because it turns out, and I feel that with that facade that the old male archetype had,
yeah,
which was around not expressing grief, fear, anger was cool, right?
Yeah.
But fear, grief, that I don't think, I'm not a scientist or a doctor, but I don't think it's scientifically possible just to turn off a single tap when it comes to emotions. And so I have been going through life thinking that I'm Cool Hand Luke, you know, always on a level. No matter what's going on out in the world, Simon's always on a level. You can just, yeah, Simon's just gonna be really cool. And that was true to an extent, but I also hadn't experienced deep joy. I hadn't experienced ecstasy.
Yeah.
Because those taps have been turned off, partly, not completely, partly because of the, albeit well-intentioned, male archetype in our household growing up.
Yeah.
You know, I want to add to that and make a bit of a contrast. I witnessed my father cry twice in my life when I was a kid, and it was just a few seconds. One was when he held me and we were at my grandfather's funeral. And I remember a tear. The second time, I didn't even see him. I just heard him briefly. And it was when Robert Kennedy was assassinated. I never saw him do it. So that contrast with your experience with your children is just incredible.
Simon, can you talk about, we're trying to explore compassion as an active noun and how that works in our lives, and how, if this is a new archetype, which I love what you said, because what we're looking to, and what we've had on our podcasts, we have mythologists and some of the great minds around the world in human consciousness, and what role does compassion and how you define it, so you can help us talk about this as we are in search of the new compassionate male, and how this might inform an archetype that we can go forward with.
Mm. Well, compassion is a fascinating one. And I've worked within my professional life in the field of compassion, helping to launch the Charter for Compassion with Karen Armstrong and with TED. And I love how Karen defines compassion of dethroning oneself from one's sense of self and putting your shoes in your feet in the shoes of the so-called other. For me, what compassion means to me, suffering with compassion, suffering with, and that means so much to me. For the last 6 years or so, we have designed our family life around Kate's menstrual cycle. She experienced very severe symptoms around her period and was diagnosed with PMDD, and found this field of menstrual cycle awareness, this way of living in accordance with all of our natural cycles, our inner seasons. And so the only reason why we're having this conversation right now is because Kate is in her spring season. So she had her period last week. She's now got more energy. It's possible we're able to have this conversation at this time because of how we design our life.
Wow.
Being witness to, being present with the pain. And I want to start with our women. Is an essential ingredient, in my view, of this new compassionate male. Need to recognize the ancestral, strategic suppression of women over millennia, and how that lives on in today's world. Yes, we have made strides, pigeon steps of progress, but I look at the pain and suffering, and let's just take childbirth alone, just as one thing. Of course, there's monthly pain in the form of period, mm-hmm. but childbirth alone, the fact that we do not hold up our women in higher regard in our society due to the immense courage and resilience and beauty of women who birth children is a travesty. And it tells you something about our cultural values straight away. So part of compassion is also facing up to the brutal facts and truths of what it means to be male, the privileges that it affords us, and also the blessings that are in that pain as well. Rather than, I think that a horrible shorthand for period was called the curse. Now, I see it, and Kate sees it, and many others see it as a blessing.
Yes.
Through that pain, through being present with that pain, through deep rest, through self-care and being cared for by our children and by me, through honoring the natural cycle, has led to so much deep wisdom. Kate's is not alone, but we realize that she's got so the creative visionary. I mean, you could write that if you get a Hollywood producer over next to a menstrual mother over here, they'll have a field day. I mean, some of the things that come out of Kate's visions and her time from deep rest. So when I suffer with, and of course to be present with a loved one who is suffering deeply is to suffer with, mm-hmm. To truly witness, and witness not just with my eyes and my other senses, but also with my choices. Again, yes. What we were talking about earlier, about what am I going to let go of in order to honor that suffering? And then how can, because suffering and pain are unfortunately an essential part of what it means to be human, therefore rather than resisting it and rejecting it, how can we look within the cracks? As Rumi said, the wound is where the light enters you. Mm. How can we look through that wound and elicit and let our own visions, our own creativity, our own compassion be illuminated further? So to suffer with means to slow down. It means to live more in accordance with the cycle, the natural cycles, and men we have our own cycles, our own fluxes in energy as well. They may not be as explicit as women, but certainly over the last 6 years, I'm now in sync with Kate, my wife. So when she is low energy, I am high energy, and vice versa. And it also means facing up to, and that can mean different things to different people, the very real unnecessary suffering of our women and our role as men and our ancestors as well. Yes. In that pain. And the thing that I feel is so important within this is that my pain that I feel is inseparable from the world's pain. Kate's pain, when she is having a period or when we're having an argument, that emotional pain, whatever, is inseparable from the pain and anxiety, the depression, the other pain that is being experienced right now. There's a symbiotic yes. relationship to it. And for some, that might feel like a burden. For me, it's a liberation, because it enables me to get out of the way of myself. This is
out of our victimhood.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's not just my stuff that I'm feeling. Thank goodness I can feel. That for me is at the heart of what compassion is to feel fully, to be fully alive, to be fully human. And I am so thankful that I am able to feel that pain and that joy and not be Cool Hand Luke anymore.
Wow. You know, I want to pick up just one little piece of all the gold that you just laid out. Equality, equality, equality. How many times it's all about women's rights and women's equality? Well, you just took it to a much, much, much deeper level, to the level of honoring. And, you know, that's the first time in our conversations that we've really delved into that. And I so appreciate you expressing it and how you express that.
It's so much in our history, his story, that we look at it in a hierarchical sense, when it's really that the jailer and the jailed are both in prison. They're both in, there is no this is where we're turning this back out, and the liberation is a liberation for all.
Yes, it's a reevaluation of what it means to be strong as well. Nothing I have ever done in my life, there's no male bodybuilder on this planet who is as strong as a birthing woman.
No.
And I also want to say it's not just about the birthing women, and I know that there will be listeners and viewers who have chosen not to have children or are unable to have children at all. The reason why I keep mentioning it to it is partly because it's what I've witnessed.
Yes.
It's so close. We've got three young children, and as I said, I'm still processing a rather traumatic birth experience as well. But that is just one example, one manifestation of what we are all capable of. We are all capable of. But cycle after cycle, right now, there will be millions of women going through unspoken pain. Mm-hmm. And when you and I think that the giving voice to it, naming it, you said before about how do we, when we're going into the limelight, how do we wrestle with the detractors and others? Well, part of it is having the conversation. Taking it out of the shadows. And I think that part of compassion is naming the suffering that is happening. Allowing it, inviting the conversation around the blood, the literal blood, the sweat and the tears that are being turned away because it's taboo to do so, even exactly. though it is as natural as the sun rising or setting.
Absolutely. Gloria Steinem talks about controlling the means of reproduction, that is what is happening. And I just imagine when you were speaking, Simon, I imagined a soundboard where the voices of women were down, the voices of men were down, were up here. And I imagine what it would sound like if we brought the voices of women, the voices, so that they were being heard at the same level. What might that sound like? What might this world, what kinds of opportunities would that open up in our minds and hearts and our souls? Should we be able to bring voice to those, to all the nuances and all of the world of women that would come, that would we, as we explore ourselves in learning what that would be like, that we could be part of helping that happen?
Yes, and look at examples where women do have a voice that is listened to and respected, where there's heads of state. Look at the way in which countries' response to the coronavirus, those that have fared best and responded most effectively, have been those with female leadership. I think that part of my role in this life is to do exactly what you've just described, Dennis, which is to celebrate and give voice to hand over the mic, really, to our girls and our women.
Yes.
And I think that the pendulum might need to swing in such a way that it might feel unjust for many men. Well, yeah. so be it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in a couple of generations or a few generations time, there will become an equilibrium, and the grandfather clock will be a grandmother clock, and the pendulum will rest in the middle, masculine and feminine. Then there may well be equality. Right now, it's not a reality. And so a starting point for me is humility. Humility. It's wow.
Yes.
Our girls and women are amazing. And I don't feel that, you know, when we talk about equality, part of that is, well, what does that look like in the real world? There's talk about equal pay, for example. I believe women ought to be paid more. Many women have to put their careers on hold, or feel that they need to put their careers on hold in order to have a family. Those who menstruate, again, so much leave, such a lack of productivity, because our society is structured in that 24/7 go, 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 stiff British upper lip, you know, just plow on through, you'll be fine, go for it. What happens? You know, I end up in a hospital bed, you end up, Clay, in a forest contemplating, yep. you know, with an existential threat and a potential heart attack. And yep. so many women are unable to work, or are absolutely miserable at work, because they've got intense period pains, can't talk about right. it, and still need to be productive as well. I think women should be paid more than men, and that would go some way towards true equality.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love how you frame that, because we're seeing this in our work. We're seeing so many of the women, that the women's voices are coming up, and we need them. There is a balance that we can achieve. We're out of balance. We're like a wheel that's rolling, that's balanced on one side and the other side isn't, and it's doo-doom, doo-doom, doo-doom. And all we would need to do would be to round out that wheel and allow it to and it will smoothly go. And that's what we can help do.
Yes, and while we're doing that, we can also tune up the feminine qualities that we as men have as well.
Clay?
Yep.
Clay, thank you. The
solar masculine and the lunar masculine. We've had that conversation a couple times recently.
With one of the great mythologists of our time.
Yeah, and that is so true. And this is what I've seen until I've connected head and heart, integrated this, then I'm not a complete man. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm pushing down, I'm spending all this energy pushing this down because that's what the patriarchy says. Don't show that. And I'm not putting that energy out. I'm wasting it. Mm-hmm. Howard said, the lunar leads and the solar executes. Mm. And when I first heard that, I thought, no. But no, that's true. That's been my experience in the Marine Corps. It's been my experience in the corporation. Leadership comes really from the heart. And if I have not developed my heart in that way, who am I to call myself a complete man?
Mm. How is that lunar cycle and the menstrual cycle not the manifestations of the cyclical element of what I get broken away from, what I have lost, what I need women to help me to regain that spirit.
Mm. Well, it's coming. I hope it's coming. If Kate, my wife, has something to do with it. It's...
Oh, no. I do believe that it is, Simon. Simon, thank you. Is there, before we finish today, for the, your graciousness of you giving us this time today, is there anything we haven't spoken about that is important for you to talk about or to at least touch on before we get off this particular episode?
Thank you. Just on this note about the masculine and feminine, or the solar and the lunar, Winston Churchill once said that you make a living by what you get, you make a life by what you give. And I feel that masculine energy is about getting, the accumulation of stuff. That feminine energy to me is about giving. It's about generosity. And so if there's something that I commit to and I pledge to, and that it's my Buddhist name, which is Jinpataya, which means limitless generosity. It's that commitment to give all that I am, not 98, not 99%, to live in a wholehearted way, to give as much of I can, non-materially and materially, and that while I give, and so I shall receive, and that symbiosis between the sun and the moon will continue.
Simon, precious light you are, and Clay, whom I love, who I work with, I get a chance to thank you both. We set an intention before we have these conversations, Simon, that we exit the conversation at a higher level of consciousness than we enter it. Mm. This has fulfilled in so many ways. Clay?
Boy, I don't know what to add to that. I'm almost speechless. I just so loved everything you said, Simon.
Thank you for joining us today, Simon, and for giving us the generosity of the time, and for introducing us to Kate and to her, the blessings of her leadership, that, and her wisdom and her journey that while I do not know her, I'm already feeling a deep connection through you to her. And thank you so much for this time.
Thank you so much for having me and for this essential exploration, this journeying into what it means to be male. Yes. And how we can lead with gentle and tender steps into the future. Such a beautiful counterbalance to the prevailing discussions that fill our screens and our airwaves. So thank you for your beautiful efforts in that regard.
It is our pleasure. Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to this podcast. I'm the producer, Dennis Tardon, with the founder, Clay Boykin, and Simon Cohen. What a blessing. We will see all of you next time.